Oh, they want to sit by you.
I should be honored, I guess.
You're the center of the Orient.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it. That's all right. What it is.
Wendy, are we ready? Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to the work session of the City Council meeting for January 16th, 2024. I saw a post by someone yesterday and said, here's a thought, we're not even halfway through January yet. That's depressing. First item is obviously Craig, because he ran right up there, so
oh, I just, if I took one more bite, you wouldn't get me out of that chair. That's good dinner tonight, so anyway. You ready? Wanted to have a little bit of a discussion with the council in a work session about license plate reader cameras. I've been thinking about this for about a, seriously presenting this to the council for about 6 months now, but considering we had a significant change in the council makeup coming up, I wanted to wait until after the first of the year, so that those of you who will be here for the foreseeable future will have a better understanding of this. So I don't know how many of you have heard about license plate reader cameras or what they do, you know, some of what they don't do, but I wanted to talk about what our current use of those are in the city of North Salt Lake by the police department, what our anticipated future use is, and the successes that we have already had with these in just some of the early stages and pilot programs we've been doing. So the history of LPR is, it goes back a long ways, and it surprised me when I really started looking how far back this technology went, because some of it precedes digital cameras. I mean, back in the Kodak days of having to run that film down to Kmart and get it developed. But it is very, it's not just used in the public sector. In fact, it's really thrived in the private sector with companies that are trying to improve their customer relations, better customer experiences, identifying rewards members, things like that. I know in our city that Jiffy Lube uses LPR. Quick Quack over here uses LPR to determine members. So if you use Quick Quack, but if you have a membership there, there's a lane right for members. Now they don't even send a person up to give you the little wipe anymore. They just open the gate and you're through. And it's really, other than the fact you don't get a cheap towelette to wipe your car down, it really speeds up the customer experience for those that are doing those memberships there. Security companies use these to determine who should and shouldn't be in certain vehicle lots and other areas. And then also towing and repossessions, as well as private tolls and private roads, use them to either monitor toll use or to allow people to just pass through if they've got like a fast pass or something like that. Just down at the bottom are some of the companies that I noticed that we may recognize that are using those. So in the public sector, the history of LPR is it was first used for national security, which is not really surprising. A lot of technologies, infrastructure technologies, community protection technologies start with our national security because they get funding, they get grants. And some of the very initial deployments were, as I read about them, they were expensive. They were a big impact on the infrastructure because cameras in the 70s and 80s had to be huge to be able to capture the data they were looking for. And then the computer systems back then, I mean, what we carry around, as you all know, what we carry around in our pocket today would fill a large guard shack back in those days. But Great Britain started using it. The United States started using it. The Border Patrol started using it in the 90s to identify potential terrorists, potential wanted individuals crossing both the north and the south border. What they also found, and it generated the interest in more of local law enforcement, was the incidental arrests that began to occur. Stolen vehicles being taken across the border, wanted persons traveling back and forth, getaway drivers, you know, trying to get through that they had that kind of information on. They didn't know to enter that information and watch for them, but as local law enforcement would go check with the border, not knowing they had this level of technology, they would be able to see, hey, yeah, that vehicle crossed into Mexico or Canada, you know, 3 hours ago. And so they were able to look that back up. So a little bit of our history of LPR in North Salt Lake. So in about 2012, we acquired a mobile LPR system, and that's it up in the right corner there if you want to look at it. We still have it. It's quite dated, but it's still, in my opinion, really good technology. In the time that we acquired that, the state was very anxious that vehicles that were uninsured be impounded and taken off the street. In fact, they mandated the police that if we found an uninsured vehicle, we had to impound it. Like all state mandates, they recognized after a little bit of time that that posed some undue burdens and some, you know, unfunded mandates on local jurisdictions. They've backed off that mandatory impound. However, it is still an option for a non-insured vehicle to get impounded. As a side note, one of the things I really do like about today's technology is a lot of times we can pull someone over that doesn't have insurance. They still get a citation, but we can, if they're willing, they can purchase insurance through an app before we even leave the traffic stop, and at least have that vehicle insured for 30 days to get home or a week or whatever it is. So we're not just letting uninsured vehicles drive away willy-nilly. This particular system we had mounted on a then surplus vehicle. It's still down there, it's still working, and we get a lot of use out of it. It's connected to a statewide database that all the officers would have individual access to through their own police cars. It's through their mobile command post. However, what this does that's interesting is if an officer wants to check and see if a plate is stolen or expired or uninsured, they have to enter that plate into their mobile command terminal. It takes 5 or 6 seconds, sometimes a little bit longer, to get a response back. At the start of a shift, what we do with the mobile LPR data is we download that day's entire database. And it then sits on a server in the back of the car, and it's an instantaneous comparison with what the camera is reading. And the cameras are about 95% accurate, maybe a little bit less on these older cameras. But if we drive by a vehicle that is stolen and it reads that plate, it's an instantaneous notification that we just passed a stolen car. Mobile LPR is a real force multiplier for getting a lot of intelligence and a lot of ground covered quickly, but it's also limited because it has to have an officer operating it. You can't just leave it out there somewhere and it doesn't drive itself yet. Maybe that day's coming. Although in the winter I see in the Midwest, self-driving cars are not doing really well and what's going on. So might be beyond my time when they drive themselves. So I want to talk about the more useful LPR that we're using right now, and that's our stationary LPR. It stands for license plate recognition. And what we use it for is an early alert or an immediate alert system. I've typed in there an early alert, but it's really an immediate alert system for a variety of law enforcement related tasks. Most of them are quality of life and felony related investigations. It doesn't require an officer to monitor or to be on top of all the time. It doesn't require an officer to go check it every day and to set it up and to download information. It's basically operated through the cloud off of the technology that is installed behind each one of the cameras that are up. We use it both to prevent crime and to solve crimes, and I will give you some examples of how we have used that in the last year in both areas. It can find Amber Alert individuals, so if an Amber Alert goes out and one of these vehicles passes one of our LPRs, we're notified of that. We've had a number of cases where missing persons alerts have come up on our main roads. We even had one where it came in out of Idaho, and it turned out that it was more of one of those silver alerts, but we were able to work with the Idaho agency that had issued that, and the person was okay, and they were able to take them off of a missing and endangered status. It also allows us to not just use the state database, but if we are just looking for a car locally, we can enter that data in, and only our officers would be alerted if that vehicle was located. So if we have a local investigation going on, one of our detectives can just go into the system, log in, say, I am looking for a white Chevy Malibu ABC123, and please limit the notification to any of our officers. And then put notes down there and say, if you find this vehicle, this is what I want them for. I either do or do not have probable cause to make a stop on this person. If I do, usually the detective will say, call me out. If I don't, he'll just say, would you please let me know where and when that vehicle was seen so that I can follow up with my investigation later on. The use of LPRs is regulated quite closely by state law and our department policy. It's specifically not a data storage program. We don't have large intelligence files that we're keeping anywhere, nor does the company that we contract with to use their cameras. In fact, in the MOU that we have with them, that data is only stored for a maximum of 30 days, so we can only look back on a particular location or a crime up to 30 days, and then it's automatically purged from the system, and it's not retrievable. We can't get it back, and the company has said, don't even ask, we purge it completely. We can't get it back. Now, I don't know if that's their line. I've always heard that once something's out there, it's always out there, but in the memorandum of understanding and the agreements that we have with both Flock Safety, which is one company, and Motorola Vigilant, the other company, they all say it's completely non-retrievable. Now, if we do take data off for a police report, that data can be stored in a North Salt Lake officer incident report. So, for example, if a stolen car passes one of the license plate readers and takes a photo of that license plate, we can obtain that photo through our own records and attach that as a file to the report for court later on to say, yes, this is what gave us probable cause to believe that vehicle was in the area. But that's only one element of an investigation like that. The other thing that I think is really important for you as a council to know, and we've made sure that our elected officials at the state legislature know, is they're audited very closely and regularly. I can't just decide one day I want to see what's going on at Redwood Road and I-215 and just turn the camera on and watch it. You have to specifically put in what your search parameters are if you're looking for information on a crime. And then you have to follow what we call CJIS, or Criminal Justice Information System policy, which is regulated by particularly the Department of Justice, which always includes a legal reason for the search, and it can't just be, I'm interested, and a case number if it's applicable. So if we ever suspect we've got somebody that just wants to follow Ted around, for example, one day, they're gonna have to enter in a reason for why they want to do that. And I won't tell you that is never, ever falsified, but when it is, it's usually on the news. You see news stories from time to time where officers unlawfully access state information databases for their own personal use. It's a Class A misdemeanor to do that, and I'm beyond confident that our officers recognize the severity of violating those CJIS policies.
They would have to drive really slow because Ted takes his bike everywhere, though. So.
But he does have a license plate on the back that says, I am happy. So it's great. The agency heads or whoever we designate can see and monitor what officers are doing and what their past searches have been and what their reasons were for doing that. We can also, as we do share our data through memorandums of understanding with other agencies that are using these databases, we can also monitor what they're searching. So if Salt Lake City is searching our cameras, we not only can, we do spot audit. Why are they looking at our cameras and are they entering in the proper information? We're not gonna get in there and interfere with their investigation or try to jump, you know, a call or something on them, but we can make sure that they are going in and giving us their legal reason and their case number as to why they're doing it.
I was gonna ask that question. I assume we're coordinating with other agencies.
Yeah, I have a map of where our cameras are, but I will tell you that in Davis County, Clearfield, Roy is just outside of our county, Centerville, and they both have very robust programs, even more robust than ours are right now, and we're pretty good. And
so what about South Davis?
Well, Bountiful does not have them at this point. I don't know if they are going to choose not to go with them. I mean, Bountiful is one of those cities that if you're going to get into Bountiful, you're going to come through Centerville or North Salt Lake first. And I think they do rely a little heavily on if a stolen car passes into North Salt Lake going north, and we don't have officers in the area, Bountiful knows where to look for that and get it to. And that is that's broadcast over our dispatch channel. One of the little things about being the gateway into Davis County, we get used for some of that stuff, but we return the favor. And if we get into a stolen car situation, we chase them out of the city really quick and let them deal with it. So, it's also, I think, important for you to know that the legislation that governs what municipal and county and state departments can use this for is subject to the state auditors review at any time. And we never quite know when that's going to happen. And there's not always very much advance notice. So we're careful with how we use that data. I want to go over what LPR is not, just to hopefully ease a lot of the rumors that are out there. It is not a live video feed or any kind of a surveillance system. Now, we have those in the city. We use them in areas where we have congested traffic. The police department does have some access. Public Works manages that for our city, and they do a great job with that. It protects our city infrastructure, that live video feed, but that is not LPR, and those are not hooked up to any databases that could tell us when plates pass through a place. It does not track individuals, and it does not report personal or business data about the vehicle it detects. It's a bias-free system. It can't tell you who's driving, what they look like, or anything like that. It just tells us that a vehicle with this plate went by this location at this date and time, such as a stolen vehicle. We can then use that through further follow-up as evidence of criminal activity. It's not facial recognition. As I mentioned, it does not detect the driver of a car. In fact, even in our daylight photos, I cannot think of one situation where the photo has been quality enough to detect who the driver is. I haven't seen one with an open window yet go by. Maybe it could if there was no window. But the cameras are specifically designed to photograph license plates and the reflective paint that's on them. You know that we just got those black license plates that are all the rage right now, and I think they're pretty cool. I got one. But that legislation to have a black license plate was passed 2 or 3 years ago. But the holdup was they could not find a black paint that was reflective in nature that qualified for our state license plates. And so one of these cameras are designed to do is only get those reflective plates. It does have the ability to recognize the color of a car, even at night. It can recognize car models like a coupe or an SUV or a truck or a commercial truck. And it can even go so far through some of its AI capability to recognize specific characteristics, like if there's a bumper sticker in the back window. So if we have a case where a car speeds away from a scene and all we get is it's a white four-door that had some kind of a sticker in the back window, we can actually put those parameters in and check cameras around for the last 30 days. Usually we do it within 30 minutes, but the last 30 days of any cars that meet that criteria. And if it did happen to pick up their plate, then that gives the detectives or the patrol officers that are following up on that a lead. But that is not probable cause to even initiate an investigation on that person other than just check and see, hey, what was the reason? You know, does that person have a reason for being in that area, and can it be explained when their car meets the description of a suspect vehicle in a crime? It's basically the same thing that we would do without LPR if someone gave us a witness description. And again, I've touched on this. It doesn't store data. It's not a data management center. And it's once it's deleted, automatically purged, it's unrecoverable. And our data is solely controlled by our agency. We will not share that for any other reason other than the lawful reasons we talked about, and that's a criminal investigation. And the contracts and memorandums of understanding with the other agencies, as well as the companies that provide the equipment for this, is that this information is never sold commercially. In fact, under state legislation, it's considered protected data. If someone comes down and fills out a grandma request, we can actually redact that information out. Our use for this is totally in compliance with state law. The state law that governs this is 41-68-2003. If you wanted to ever check that, I know the policy on the site is a little small for everybody to read, but I did bring you copies. So if you're interested in boring police policy, I've got a copy for you. But our policy is clear, it's legally reviewed, and it's been issued to every officer that uses this system. It's only used for legitimate law enforcement business. as part of our department policy. No member of the department will operate any portion of the ALPR without training on the use of that system and what our policy is guiding that. If any information is obtained, it should be verified before any action is taken. And what that means, if we get a reading that a car is stolen, we still double check that with live dispatch to make sure that there has not been some kind of a hiccup along the way in the transfer of the NCIC database to what the LPR cameras are telling us. No member of the department can access confidential data without a legitimate use, which means they can't just go on and say, hey, I want to search all the red cars that went through an area and then find one and access that plate through their own, even though you don't need a case investigation to run a plate, they cannot use information off the LPR to go run that plate. That might be a little bit confusing. If any of you have ever ridden with the police or know anything what we do, it's not uncommon for an officer at a traffic light or at a stop sign to come up behind a vehicle and say, you know, something suspicious, and just punch that plate in, just out of curiosity. And they can do that, and that's done very frequently. But they can't do that sitting in their car on one screen having LPR data come up and running them off the other one. And then finally, it's, as I've mentioned, it's limited to criminal investigations, no civil problems, so we're not going to be using this for child custody disputes or things like that that have not reached the criminal level. It's used for locating wanted individuals, missing or endangered persons, and stolen vehicles. So I want to go over a couple of really good uses that we've had in North Salt Lake in the last, probably about 18 months that we've been doing this. When we first were approached by a company that had what we considered really good equipment, they gave us the chance to just pilot two cameras. And so we piloted two in Foxborough. One we put up at the north entrance of Foxborough Drive off of Center Street, and one we put at the west entrance off of Redwood Road by Lee's Market and Burger King and Del Taco in that area. Those are really the two most busy entrances into the Foxborough neighborhood, although there's a number of others. We thought the way Foxborough is laid out, this will give us a pretty good idea of vehicles that are coming in and doing mischief. Almost immediately, we started to see results. Crimes involving retail theft, both at Maverick and Lee's, Ace Hardware, we were able to solve those with the availability of LPR cameras. Victims of protective orders, when we would have a domestic violence case, one of the really great things is if the victim obtains a protective order and says, my significant other or the person I'm protected from can't come to this house, in fact, they have no reason to even be around here, and they come into that neighborhood and we've entered that plate in, our officers are notified that there is a potential violation of that protective order going on and can respond down in that area and hopefully prevent a violation from occurring. I don't think a person's going to violate a protective order if there's a marked patrol car sitting in front of the house of their intended target. Stolen vehicles coming into the neighborhood were immediately identified by on-duty officers, and we were able to respond to those. I will tell you that in a number of cases, those vehicles, as soon as we tried to pull them over, fled from the officers, and in most of those cases, we abandoned the chase. If all we have is a stolen vehicle and they're out of the neighborhood, we're not going to let that rise to a dangerous situation within the neighborhood. But we also know that people that bring stolen vehicles into the neighborhood didn't just come in because that was transit usually. They're in there to burglarize vehicles, steal other vehicles. One of the cases we had early this morning was we were sent down to Foxborough where there was an abandoned vehicle that was left running with its back window bashed out. The person went out to get in their car and found that car there instead, and their car had been stolen. So we know that these people that bring stolen vehicles into our city are not just using them for convenience and traffic. We have Lime scooters for that, thanks to Sherry. So got plenty of things to do. Sex offenders that are already required to register where they're living, where they work, and what vehicles that they are driving, and that's a public registry, can also be detected. And if they come into the city that without it making sense, we know about that. I had a slide in here, but it was so convoluted as to what happened, I thought that's going to take forever to explain. But in essence, what happened is we had a registered sex offender from Utah County come into our city one day, and we got the notification, which is not unusual. But an hour later, we get a notification that this person's in a different area of the city. And then 2 minutes later, they're coming back the other way in the city. And then about an hour later, they're driving. So they're just, we're seeing them drive around the city. And we were able to notify their APNP agent that monitors their sex offender registry of what they were doing. We don't know what happened with them from there, but it was kind of comforting for me to know that if we had a report of somebody calling a kid over to a car or something like that, we at least had a good lead as to where to start with as to who it was. Kids are not really always thinking much about license plates, but they can describe a car pretty good, like a big white van with a dog on the side or something. So with that, we have now worked with the company Flock Safety, and we have 9 cameras operating on the west side, and you can see where we've got them. It's a little bit, you can't see my pointer anyway. It's a little bit big, but we have one just west of the freeway on 1100 North that gets any car that tracks cars driving westbound on 1100 North. We have one out at just south of north of 1100 North that sees vehicles coming into the city from the north. We still have the vehicle number 3 by Burger King. That has we really contemplated with these others taking that one down, but that was such a productive crime-solving camera that we have left that one up. We have 2 for east and westbound traffic. Those are numbers 8 and 9 out west of Legacy Highway, so that's just one way in through that back way through Salt Lake. And then cameras 6 and 7 are north and southbound on Redwood Road. 6 is for southbound vehicles leaving our city, and 7 are for northbound vehicles that may come in from the Rose Park, Glendale area. And then 5 is westbound on Center Street. So if a vehicle comes in off of I-15 and gets off and comes west, and then 4 is eastbound on Main Street, just right over here, west of the apartment complex. So if they get off Center Street and come east. We really feel like we have the west side of the city pretty well covered to help find cars or wanted people that may come into the city. We don't on the east side yet, and that's one of the things that we will be probably bringing to you as a police department when the budget comes up in March and beyond. I want to give you just a couple of case examples. This one occurred July 23rd, 22 through March 4th of 23. One of our more common retail theft calls are beer runs, and they're not only just annoying, but they lead to other problems when there's a, you know, if you're 21 and you have a good job, you go in and you buy your beer. If you're 16 and you're going to have a huge party, you go steal your beer and you do these late night beer runs. And this was occurring for a period of about 8 months at our Mavericks out on Center Street and Redwood Road. And one of the factors that it was Detective Everett that worked this case, these cases, he noticed is in a lot of them we're seeing the same kind of a description of a car. So he went in after one of the last ones and put the description of that car into the parameters and found almost immediately after that beer run had occurred at the West Maverick, this car had traveled south on Redwood Road and he was able to see its license plate. He followed up with that case, and it wasn't the registered owner of the car that was guilty of that. It was people he was loaning his car to. He had 2 particular friends that he would loan his car to. I'm sure he knew what they were doing with it. He just didn't want to go be the thief himself, but he'd provide the transportation. But he was able to close 8 thefts when that was done. At the time I typed this up, I thought it was 7, but I asked him and he confirmed I closed 8 thefts. It was always the same victims, and they have not had these people come back. And the 2 suspects have been charged, and they're all misdemeanors. We couldn't aggregate each crime into one criminal enterprise. It's not worth it with retail thefts anyway, but they were charged with several Class B misdemeanor counts of retail theft. They did live in Salt Lake City, and they were using a friend's car. So that was one really great example of putting a stop to individuals that just on a very random, almost once or twice a month basis, would just come in to our city, decide to rip one of our businesses off and take off. And we probably would not have found them without just the luck and happenstance of an officer being there at the same time without this technology. Whoop. Another very recent example was just last month. This truck alerted to the camera on Center Street at about 7th West as being stolen earlier that day from Orem, somewhere between 640 and 650. It was one of those where the driver had Said I went outside, I started my truck to warm it up, and when I came outside, it was gone. So about 11 hours later, this vehicle's driving around our city. They pulled into the East Maverick parking lot, and Officer Boyle blocked them in, so there was no chase or anything that ensued. Took him into custody. We found drugs and drug paraphernalia, that little baggie, that's fentanyl. That's probably more of a personal use fentanyl. Sometimes we see those bags come with hundreds and hundreds of pills. But they found the paraphernalia for methamphetamine and fentanyl, arrested the driver, and got the truck safely returned back to the owner. These are just two really recent cases that we have had. And that's really the end of my presentation on it, but I am open to any questions, any clarifications. I didn't throw this in the packet, but are any of you interested in reading the policy? It's not easy reading, but if you want it, I've got it for you. If you don't, it's about 2 cents a copy, so it's really not that much. And just so you know, this policy is reviewed by Lexapol, which most police departments in the state use. So it's been reviewed by their attorneys to be in compliance with state law. And is this okay when you take this out?
I don't know.
It's on the website, so you can see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Submit it into the record.
Chief, I have some questions.
Okay.
This sounds like a really exciting idea, and I can definitely see some benefits, but I also see some areas where it should be controlled fairly carefully and purposefully.
Yep.
So I have a list of questions. You answered some of them, and some of them may require follow-up as we talk about it more.
Okay.
So you talked about how they don't store any of the data for longer than 30 days.
Right.
So for those 30 days, where is it stored? Is that here on our site, or is that external, the company
no,
that
it's
we
served
contract
on, it's
with?
Served on the cloud server of the Flock system that any agency that has signed a memorandum of understanding can search that data.
And that rule that they can't store any data longer than 30 days, is that the company... Is that their
that's
rule?
That's state law.
That's a state law.
That's
okay.
So that's what they.
So
have
they couldn't
there.
Decide. No, actually, we changed our mind. Now we want to store it longer at any
right.
point without changing
nope,
the state
they can't
statute.
Do that.
Okay. And then you said they were audited, and that's by the state. The state audits.
The state has the ability to audit. We internally audit our use for our officers, and we also audit external use. So I get on Vigilant system, for example, which is the Motorola system, we actually get a monthly report of who came in and accessed our cameras. And we've had agencies from the East Coast using our cameras looking for information on their investigations. And what we specifically look for is there an agency case number that's attached to that? Is there a specific officer or detective who conducted that search and what their reason was? And most of the time when we get them from far away, they're for serious felony type cases or missing persons. Locally, we get a lot of from like Centerville, and we'll search their cameras too, but we'll get things for thefts, retail thefts, more misdemeanor type cases from the local agencies.
So the audit that you get that shows which agencies outside of our city are accessing this information, are you getting that information here in real time, or do you rely on the company to report that to you just so you know these people accessed this?
So any database system, including this one, and that includes our records management system and also the statewide databases, keeps a log of who did what. So if I run somebody's plate, even without a reason, there's a log kept of that. And so at any time, I can go in to the Flock data system and see, okay, which of our officers have run cases. And there's so many that it's really spot auditing. But it's also fairly easy to detect if there's something that's out of the ordinary. But it's not like I don't get an immediate email saying Woods Cross just checked your system. I run a report, and I don't even usually print it out. I just look at it and see, are our cameras being used and who's using them?
Thank you. Okay, so you talked about that we create a memorandum of understanding for other agencies that can access our information. And I'm wondering how that works. So for every single city that can access, we have deliberately and directly said, yes, you can access.
Yeah.
So this group that was from the back east, who did they have the agreement with? Right? Didn't you say somebody from back east was accessing some of the data?
Oh, police departments from back east.
So police departments, we don't have to have a direct memorandum of understanding between among police departments?
Yes, we do.
We do.
And those are aggregated and kept by the contract company. What will happen is if Savannah, Georgia wants to access our cameras, they will say to Flock Camera or to Motorola, one of the two big ones that are doing this, we would like to see the camera, we would like to see data from a North Salt Lake camera. Flock or Vigilant will send us an email saying, do you approve this agency's use? Someone here has to approve that use.
Oh, it's in real time.
It's generally me or Assistant Chief Gwilliam, and they then read the memorandum of understanding, agree to abide by it. And if they do, we've never denied access to an agency.
And are there any agencies that could supersede our permission, meaning like federal access?
No. In fact, the FBI has asked for access, and we've granted them access, but they can't just come in and demand it.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Okay, I want to talk about the example that you gave about the registered sex offender who was driving around the city. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there was an alert placed on his car so that wherever he went, they would just get an alert that he's here now. Mm-hmm. What is the volume of alerts that you're getting? I mean, I would imagine there's enough individuals that are operating that could be high.
So the most frequent alert that we get is that we don't go searching for is a stolen license plate or a stolen vehicle. We're probably seeing 3 to 4 of those a week. A sex offender, maybe a couple a month that come into the city. And if they live in our city and they're registered property, we can suppress that hit. So if we're not constantly getting alerts for the people that belong in North Salt Lake or they work in North mm-hmm. Salt Lake. It's just those that we really have no understanding of why they would come into our city. And it's not just a pass-through. If it's one alert, that's ignored. But when they start to drive around, whether that's legitimate or not, we know that's happening.
So the volume of alerts that you're getting right now is not onerous?
No, in fact, what happens, I can show any of you this during the break, what happens is we receive a text message from the company, and I'm trying to see when my last one was. So the last one was Friday, mm-hmm. and we received a text message that, if I remember right, this was a stolen plate, had driven past one of the cameras on 1100 North. And if we have available officers, they can go look for that stolen plate. If they don't, there's no obligation. It's not, this was, yeah, it was a stolen plate. This is too far away. I'll show you any of you at the break. But it gives you a description of the vehicle and what the plate is. It's also double-checked because we can see that photo and ensure that the camera read that plate properly. And there have been times where it hasn't read the plate properly and no action's taken.
Thank you.
And that vehicle, by the way, is not logged as a stolen vehicle somewhere just because it passed. It's a one-way street. It's not two-way.
Thank you. That answered my questions. Thank you.
Craig, I have a question. What, in your perfect world, how many more cameras do you need to cover the city?
I think we'd like to propose that we put about another 6 to 8 cameras east of the freeway this coming year. By far, with all the retail that's on the west side of the city, it was most advantageous. But some of the crimes that we've been able to solve relate to vehicle burglaries and home burglaries and also protective orders, and we feel like another 6 to 8 cameras on the east side of the city would be helpful. They are not owned by us. We lease them, so if they get hit by a car, we don't have to buy a new one. They buy a new one, they're quite expensive technology, but we lease them for about $3,000. It might be going up to $3,500 a year per camera. So we're just over $20,000 a year right now, but as you can see just by these two quick examples, and there's been dozens of those, we've saved hundreds of man hours in overtime.
I just have one question. Have we had any pushback concerns from residents that you know of for the...
I've had one resident who called me and asked, well, he sent in a report of concern and I think it got forwarded to me just saying, what are these? I called him up and spoke to him and he just said, thanks. Okay. I've talked to other residents in the city that I know personally about them and it's been very positive. In fact, I have had no negative pushback from it. Although I do anticipate there is that sense of privacy there. And without the guardrails, this is potentially scary technology. But I really do believe our legislature has thought this out well. Even before the legislation, we were abiding by these guidelines with the first two we put up. So, you know, as long as we are entrusting our officers to follow the rules, which we do, I feel very good about that privacy safeguard. I will also tell you that accessing this information unlawfully, if it resulted in a Class A misdemeanor, we would terminate that officer. Not only would they have a criminal filing, but they would be terminated.
Chief, can you just give us a rough sense of the cost for the city to use it?
So right now we're about $18,000 for the 9 on the west. We were able to, when we first started piloting the program, we were able to enter into a longer term agreement to keep them below $3,000. If we cover the east side, I think they're either going to go to they've told us they're going to go to either $3,000 or $3,500 in January of this year. I haven't seen the price increase. So if we did another 6, it would be about another $18,000 to $20,000.
And once we buy the cameras, we own the cameras?
No, we lease these cameras, and they replace them. If they go bad, they come out and replace them. They service them. They clean them. They do have the ability to, through their computer system, make sure they're aligned properly. And if they see that they're not aligned properly, they will send a team out and realign those. There's no maintenance or upkeep responsibility for us with that. In fact, they install them. And if we want them moved, they'll come and move them.
Do they ever have a grandfather program that if you build or do a program that you do so many years that they would honor the price that you've...
They have with the 9 that we have in place through the term of our agreement with them. It's like any other software or support thing, you know. Technology, that's the best part about technology, is once you buy something, you're buying its updates forever. But they have held to that initial 9 cost and have given no indication, at least for the next 2 years, that they're going to raise those.
Mayor, may I ask a question? The question that I've got is, based on the policy and on the procedures, the ALPR data is then considered private or protected?
I believe it's protected by the legislature. It seems to me when I read 416A 2003, it used the word protected. But you're looking at the grandpa of grandma. I have to call Wendy or Todd or Ken or my wife. I don't know.
The reason that I ask that,
I'm going to remember that one and use it when it's advantageous.
The reason that I ask that is that the data is purged after 9 months. But
no, it's purged after 30 days.
After 30 days. But you retain the logs for 9 months?
Nope.
It says, in no event shall this data be maintained longer than 9 months, unless it is subject to a warrant, preservation request, or disclosure order.
Okay, so if we use it in the course of an investigation, let's say a plate pops up, there's no log or anything, but if a plate pops up and the investigation clears that plate, that plate cannot be stored in our system longer than 9 months. But it's not stored on, that's in our record management system. It is not in the LPR system.
But the ALPR, if the plate detects crime, you're saying even if it detects crime, it's gone in 30 days?
Yes. So if we get notification of something 31 days later, we can't access it through LPR. For example, this case right here, it happened on December 15th when I was putting this together. It was January 6th. Today's the 16th. It was yesterday I might have been looking for these. I couldn't get the actual LPR pictures up because they were gone. These are pictures from our dash cam and the officer's evidence.
How did that connect the car in the previous example over the course of 8 months that they had been involved in multiple burglaries?
So the Maverick employees always said it's a white hatchback. And so, and they were usually late at night. So whenever it kept seeing that pop up and up and up again, he finally got around to one of them and said, I'm going to run this white hatchback at 11:10 p.m. within about a mile radius of the Maverick and see if it went through any cameras. And this that car right there came up. He got that plate. He then began his investigation from that point to find out who did the car belong to, who was driving it. He did a picture lineup. It's called a photo spread. Took it back to the clerks and said, these are the same guys that keep coming into the store. So it was not just relying. There's no way that you can make a case off of an LPR other than a stolen vehicle driver that you catch immediately or something like that.
I have another question about the company Flock. Do they submit to you any type of internal or external auditing to just demonstrate that our system has been well managed? And what I'm particularly thinking about is potential that they are hacked, where somebody could access through them all of these cameras?
No, I think they would be, and neither does Motorola. And frankly, I don't think we have a system that does report to us that they haven't been hacked. I guess I would just trust that if one of our contractors was hacked, they would notify us.
Yeah.
There is so much data that's stored outside of this building actually just a bunch of plates driving down the street, I would be a little less than worried about. Because even if that data was hacked, whoever hacked it couldn't do anything with it. They'd have to hack the state Division of Motor Vehicle computer after that to go in and make anything of the plate.
Thank you.
Any other questions about what we're doing with it? And I appreciate the questions.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. Sorry, Ken. I think I...
All right, Ken.
Great. Let's move on then. Oh, I don't have somebody to advance slides here.
While you're waiting, I just wanted to mention Councilmember Baskin needed to make a presentation to another city, and so she's temporarily excused. She'll be right back when she's done.
Great. This is kind of a two-part presentation. I'm glad I'm disappointed Councilmember Baskin isn't here because she cares about this one quite a bit, and I've talked to her about this.
Ken, do you want to?
Do you think we
sure could
do it at 7?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do it at a different time?
Yeah, why don't we just move it down into the body? Okay. And in fact, we could take a quick break and start our meeting on time and feed Elisa. Okay, let's adjourn right now and reconvene at 7.